You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that deserves your respect, not your erotic speculations, you hormonal vulgarian. It's Sift Pop. Welcome to Sift Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. Woo! I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he should know. He studied the podcast actuarial tables. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. Lazy, Vulgar, Rancid Little Philistines was the name of his grade school jazz band. It's Ian Whittington, ladies and gentlemen.
I am greatly offended. I did not have anything to do with jazz at any point in my life. Ever.
Why you gotta break the verbal reality? Why you gotta break the... Why can't you just yes and, Ian?
Because
don't you know,
there's enough
improv worked?
There's enough of that in the world. I'll take everything else, but I will not take jazz.
That must
but
be the I British version that. Of improvisation instead of yes and it's no but.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no but.
No,
it literally is.
But.
Yeah. No, but what I have to say is better.
Yes, yes, yeah. I'm sure it is. Well, we are glad to have you back and glad to be chatting about movies live again, doing a live show. We do these as much as we can, and already the live audience chiming in and just... making us feel so good about coming to you live on the internets, which is a thing apparently you can do. I don't know. Who knows?
Wait, what? Not in so England. Weird. We don't have it yet. We don't have the internet.
not over there? Not over there quite yet? We are going to do some movie talk. I will say, I think it was out there for a second that we were going to talk about Poor Things. We already reviewed Poor Things on this show a while back. That was my mistake. But instead, there are now two Best Picture nominees we have not talked about for an official review. And so we're going to do one of those. We're going to do the holdovers. The other one, by the way, I think is Zone of Interest. I don't think we've done an official review on Zone of Interest. Maybe that'll be coming sometime. Who knows? But today we're going to do holdovers and then also talk about a new animated film that's on Netflix called Orion and the Dark. Charlie Kaufman, wrote it and, Netflix produced it. So we're going to talk about that one as well. Then of course we'll do some best ever challenge, a rather subjective, interesting best ever challenge today. This is going to be fun. These are our best ever movies that should have had Charlie Kaufman involved with them somehow. Like, it just feels like it's got Kaufman's fingerprints on it, even though he wasn't involved. That'll be fun. And then, of course, we'll do some buried treasure at the end. I will remind you before we get into it that the link to make your Sposkers pick is live at the website. Go to sifpop.com. Click up at the top where it says Sposkers, and it will take you to the form. You fill out your choices for all the Oscar categories, and then whoever gets the most right, we will find out on live Sposkers broadcast evening. which will take place, get this, in conjunction with the live Oscar broadcast. It's a wild idea we had. So yeah, we're going to do it that way. And we have a lot of fun. We kind of go through the night as the awards come in, keep updating it, kind of see how people are doing, see what the scores are, and then crown a winner at the end of that. So get your picks in now. Don't wait, because, you know, if you wait, you might forget. Also, I want to wait till the last day so I can get them all right. And if you wait, then you might beat me. So,
wait, are you more likely to do it the later you submit them?
I'm just being silly. I actually submit mine right away. But but there is something like, there are people who are like, I wait till the last second because who knows how the momentum's going to shift and what's going to happen.
See if anybody gets canceled.
That's what I do. Well, yeah. not in the canceling part, but I do wait until the last minute before I put mine in.
Yeah, yeah. So so there you go. Head to, again, sifpop.com and click on Spockers if you want to play along with that. Well, we got some movies to talk about, so let's kick it off with the new one. Let's talk a little bit about Orion and the Dark.
But all the things I'm afraid of, I'm most afraid of the dark.
Ta-da!
What are you?
Isn't that obvious? The room's dark. It's dark out. Hello, I'm Dark. Of all the kids who are terrified, you are by far the loudest, the most obnoxious, and frankly, you're on a whole different level.
You're keeping a list?
Yes, I'm keeping a list. You know how many kids are afraid of me?
A boy with an active imagination faces his fears on an unforgettable journey through the night with his new friend, a giant smiling creature named Dark. This, again, as mentioned, is a new animated film on Netflix. And Charlie Kaufman wrote it, but then it was produced by Netflix and brought to the screen. Some voices you may know, including Paul Walter Hauser, who's always a lot of fun. What did you guys think of Orion in the Dark? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian, start us off.
I liked it.
Ian liked it. Andrew?
It's okay. High side of okay.
High side of just okay. I'm going to go with liked it as well. And kind of right in the middle of liked it. Ian, it sounds like we have kind of similar views. What are some of the things you enjoyed about Orion in the Dark?
I want to encourage DreamWorks, because this has still got DreamWorks attached to it.
Yes.
I want to encourage them to do this more. Like, I loved that this was kind of a bit Pixar-y, but like kind of a diet version of Pixar in the noughts and early tens, which is still better than what Pixar is doing now. But it's not
you
like...
You act like Inside Out didn't come out, like, you know, 8 years ago or whatever. Like,
that's exactly the time period I'm talking about. That was ages ago. Like, that's, what, 20... How long ago is that? 2015?
2016? Yeah, I think it was 2015. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's the region that I'm talking about and before. But I really like that element of this movie. It's got a beautiful heart to it. I think it describes definitely my experience as a kid really, really, really well. It's interesting that they had the foresight to watch my life as I was growing up and then make a movie about it in 2024 without my permission. So that opening, like 20 minutes to 30 minutes, sucked me in and really, really had me invested.
Yeah, it's certainly appropriate you mentioned Pixar. This really feels like, you know, outside in, you know, instead of inside out. Like, you've got the characters that kind of represent things, or Soul did a lot of this as well, which again is not very long ago. So yeah, there's this idea that we are starting to bring characters to metaphysical presence, you know, like ideas where, and I just think we kind of have Pete Docter to thank for this. Like, before Inside Out, it was kind of one of those things that they were afraid to do, and it worked with Inside Out, and now they've done it several more times, including in this one. I did have that initial thing where I was watching this, and I was like, is kind of stealing the Inside Out thing, but the places this movie goes and the ways that it builds these characters make it wholly unique and very, very engaging. And I think the biggest testament to that for me is the fact that I did not live this growing up. I had zero anxiety or fears growing up. I was sickeningly self-confident and you know what I mean? Like, I was that guy, you know? And
when I knew this movie got me was when it was the bully thing and punching him in the nose. Uh-huh. Because my parents said, look me in the eyes, you have our full permission to punch a bully. Like, if they are harassing you that much, you punch them. And I had that thought, what if I kill them? What if I break their nose? What if the one and only fight I get into is the one where I kill a kid? Like, and I just, that just, like, those thoughts when you're an overthinker just consume you.
I just, when people would challenge me to violence, I always thought they were kidding. I always thought it was a joke. I didn't understand. I was just like, oh, that's a funny one. But the point I'm making is, I don't connect to this on a deep level very much at all, but it still sucked me in because I was able to see the world through the character's eyes. It's a very well-built central character. There's some really interesting things it's doing with the structure and the way it's telling the story, which, you know, thank you, Charlie Kaufman. Like, you knew that was going to be in there somewhere. And I really liked all that stuff. And so I found myself more invested than I thought I was going to be based on my very boring childhood where I was optimistic about everything.
No one's making movies about your childhood, Aaron.
Nope. That's not true. There are a couple, but yeah, for the most part, we like to deal with the trauma of childhood, which I was privileged enough not to have a lot of that. Andrew, what about you? What are some of your thoughts?
Well, for the rest of us that had survival instincts growing up and knew that we should be afraid of things, there are so many layers to this film. There's the surface commentary on being young and afraid of everything, but then there's also this additional layer showing that the adults can be afraid too, and that we sometimes never grow out of our fears of certain things, and that's okay. This movie is... It could have so simply just been the story of Jacob Tremblay and Paul Walter Hauser's character, The Dark. You know, it so easily could have been that. But it's Charlie Kaufman, and he doesn't do simple. So there is so many different layers to this film, and I think that I really do appreciate them going the extra mile to try and give us this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see, what else can we talk about? Do we want to talk about some of the voice performances? Jacob Tremblay continues to do great work with whatever he does. Like, it's clear he understands how to, you know, embody a character. I mentioned Paul Walter Hauser, who plays The Dark, you know, was a lot of fun.
A great Seth Rogen impression.
That's exactly what I thought the entire movie. Like, Paul Walter Hauser is really doing his best Seth Rogen, isn't he?
Yeah. Does he just sound like... I thought it sounded like Paul Walter Hauser. Was he doing
it
a voice,
like Paul
think?
Walter Hauser doing a Seth Rogen impersonation.
Yeah, it sounded a bit extra to me. It sounded a little bit... What this might be a little bit mean, but what sold it to me, I was like, I'm getting some emotion and feeling from this. It can't be Seth Rogen. It must be someone else.
Nice. Nice. What else, guys? What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I don't want to spoil it too much, but I do love the structure. I think that, for me, it was running out of steam a little bit when we got, like, to the halfway mark, and it takes this turn and adjusts its direction, and it's kind of hanging a lantern on what it's trying to do as a story as well, and it gives it permission to go a lot further and bend some rules and be a little bit wackier. And I love that. That re-engaged me at a point where I'd started to drop off and thought, I've got the message. This is a great after-school special. Let's move on. So it did kind of re-engage me.
I feel that if this film committed more to the father-daughter elements, I think the message would have been better served. because as it stands for me personally, it feels kind of like a high budget Schoolhouse Rock feature film. Like it's not really, I wasn't endeared to any of the characters.
Well, so I did want to talk about that. The character part, like being endeared to the characters a little bit, because I do think it brought the movie down for me a little bit, that I think that what some of these characters represent in our metaphor for is kind of terrible, and it made it difficult for me to see them as like characters to have empathy for, mm-hmm. when they are whispering traumatic, terrible things into people's ears to keep them up at night. And I'm just like, I don't like you. Go away. I don't want you to. I don't understand why you want this. I don't understand who, you know, like what the idea of how can I think even Dark is somebody to have empathy for or to find my way to when he's kind of leading this group of, you know,
misanthropes.
Yeah, do batters. You know, like
it's really interesting. I was waiting, and the movie didn't go this direction at all. I was waiting to find a clever reason for why Insomnia is doing the things that they're doing, and mm-hmm. why the noise robot is doing those things. And then you get a little bit, because Insomnia is like, oh, I'm not doing it. These thoughts are already there. But I feel like Inside Out gives us a lot more meaning behind that, because it's the most obvious comparison. This was just, you're just picking the things that happen and then personifying them. There's not much more to it than that.
Yeah, and there, I think I understand what the movie wanted to do to distinguish itself from the typical animated movie, which is to say, no, we're going to make this, like, anxiety is, or fear, that's one of the Inside Out characters, right? I'm not wrong about that. One of them is the mm-hmm. fear character, the anxiety character, the guy, not Envy, not the green
that's
girl.
Rage.
The purple guy, not the red anger monster. Anyways, The idea is, in this case, it's like, no. That's like the polished version of anxiety. No. This is anxiety. Like this is Joaquin Phoenix and Boy is Afraid. Like this is, you know, this is real stuff, not the fake stuff. So
we have Inside Out at home.
Yes, that's right. So I think that's what the movie was trying to do. And in some ways I respect it for being consistent to the vision of, we're not trying to polish over these things. We're not trying to eliminate these things. We're trying to figure out how to be functional human beings who deal with these things, who struggle with these things, who persevere through these things, not necessarily eliminate them mm-hmm. or find some sort of resolution. This isn't a movie interested in resolution, I don't think. It's interested in a journey. It's interested in a story. But, you know, the emotion you receive at the end, which, by the way, I did. I you know, of course, welled up a little bit at the end, had some ocular wellitude. And that is, I think, in many ways due to the movie's ability to connect me to the relationships, not necessarily the resolution of the story. So, mm-hmm. yeah. What about you guys?
I wasn't listening.
Yeah, I was too busy having somebody whisper in my ear. Yeah, I see what you mean. I get that. I guess it's almost like it split purposes, because we don't, those metaphors aren't really our main cast. Like, our main person is this, the father and son characters. Sorry, father and daughter characters. But I do enjoy how it's doing that generational thing between them, and maybe how we're passing trauma onto our kids without realizing it. And I do love how she calls him out and says, I know what you're doing, but you know what? Keep doing it. That's mm-hmm. that's fine. That's still what we look for from our parents.
Yeah. I didn't really, this is maybe it's just me, but I didn't really take it that way. I took it more along the lines of our parents. Aaron has said this before, but we're all still kids, really. No matter how much we grow up, sometimes, like, in our, whenever we look at our parents, maybe we still see ourselves as kids, you know? And I think that is kind of what this movie is saying. I think this movie's talking about, like, just because you grow up doesn't mean that you're not, you don't have to be afraid of things anymore. I think that it's okay to be afraid of things. It's a survival instinct. It's part of human nature to be afraid of things. There's a difference, though, whenever you allow that fear to control every aspect of your being. And I think that that's what this movie's trying to say. Stay out of your own head as best you can. Realize that it is okay to be afraid of things, but try to understand them. I think maybe that could be what this movie's trying to say. Try to understand what makes you afraid. Because then maybe once you do, it won't be so scary anymore.
Yeah. And to be clear, I was scared of things as a kid. I'm still scared of things as adult. There are things that, you know, like Ian has seen me get on my hands and knees to crawl down.
Nope, that's not what you said. Hill.
I am scared of falling from you know, heights because I don't want to die. But like that existential thing of, you know, like the darkness or, you know, whatever the case is just, it's not some, it's just like, I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, why worry about something you can't control? I don't know. Like it's just for whatever reason, my brain won't, you know, worry about those things. When I'm afraid of falling, it's something I can somewhat control. I can not go to high places. I can not walk near the edge. I can, you know, those kind of things, but things where it's like, completely outside of my control. I don't know if it was just training or if it's just my personality. I don't linger on those things.
It's hard to control day-to-day things that make you anxious. It's like getting out of bed. I have to do this, but it's making me very anxious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say one thing that really confused me about the movie a little bit. You mentioned it earlier, is dark. I didn't really get Dark as a mentor or a guide because he's a big old sourpuss. He's just like, I hate the sunlight. I keep getting chased. Everyone hates me. I'm fed up of being hated. And then he just gives up. And I'm sure you could probably write essays about the deeper underlying meanings of that. But he just really confused me as a mentor and a guide. And maybe that's deliberate.
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's some wisdom in understanding there's a difference between processing reality and denial. And I think sometimes people want to deal with anxiety with denial. They want to deal with it by saying dark doesn't exist. Dark isn't a thing. Dark is terrible. It's not, you know, instead of making peace with the reality of the situation and finding a way to process through it. And I think the movie is just saying, you know, it's not sunshine and rainbows. It's not, you know, and the ability to find your way to some sort of relationship with the darkness or some sort of peace with the existence of dark is a really powerful human ability. And can lead to the ability to find joy, to find love, to find these other things that the movie, you know, eventually, walks us into. I love the ending of this movie. I think the ending of this movie really, really works. Any final thoughts on Orion and the Dark? Other than how terrible a name that is for this movie.
It's not great. No, it's not. I think that about covers it. It feels pretty much on the surface.
Well, there you go. Orion and the Dark is on Netflix, and you can check it out there. I think
the animation style. Sorry, that was my last thing. I really like the animation style.
There you go. All right, let's move on to our next review. Let's talk about a movie that's been out for a while. Let's chat a little bit about The Holdovers.
Sir, I don't understand.
That's glaringly apparent.
I can't fail this class.
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Mr. Coates. I truly believe that you can.
Every year at Barton Academy, students, faculty, and staff depart the campus for a 2-week winter break. But there are always an unfortunate few who have nowhere to go for the holidays. They're known as the Holdovers.
Mr. Hundam.
Hello, Mary.
I heard you got stuck with babysitting duty this year. How'd you manage that?
You know, he used to be a student, right?
Yeah, that's why he knows how to inflict maximum pain on us.
A curmudgeonly instructor at a New England prep school is forced to remain on campus during Christmas break to babysit the handful of students with nowhere to go. Paul Giamatti, Oscar nominated. Paul Giamatti for his role in The Holdovers. Dominic Sessa, not nominated for his role, though maybe he should have been. Divine Joy Randolph as Mary Lamb, nominated and projected to win for her.
Probably going to win.
For her role here in this movie and many others. What did you guys think of The Holdovers? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, kick us off.
Love it.
Ian?
Yeah, I loved it too.
And I loved it as well. You know why? Because this movie's amazing.
Yeah,
this
it is.
This
yeah.
is such a great movie. Andrew, why don't you start? What's tell us about why you love this movie.
This is Paul Giamatti's best performance. He's fully immersed in this role as Professor Hunnam. It is particularly impressive because it is a performance that delivers both nuance and animation. This is a guy who, whenever he needs to be subtle in his performance, he can be subtle. But then there are also parts of this movie that are very cartoonish and slapstickish. And it's really fun to see a character have that much range actor to have that much range in their performance. Speaking of performances, Divine is stellar in this film. There's no way she's going to lose. I shouldn't say that, but it's not.
You've
it's
done it
not
now.
Looking good for anybody else.
When she doesn't win, that. We all know who to blame.
This moment.
Yep. The way she keeps her composure until she can't anymore is breathtaking. This grieving mother exemplifies strength and dignity. It's a movie filled with great casting and stellar performances.
Ian, some thoughts?
That's a great summary. Paul Giamatti really, like, we know he's great, but it's a bit of a surprise. Like, just this movie comes out and he just absolutely dominates. He's so, so good. And I love a Dr. House character, and I think he doesn't just so many people get it wrong and just go too extreme and think that you just got to hate the world and be a cynic about everything. He has this amazing balance, and this is obviously in the writing as well, this amazing balance to pull it back and find some humanity. He's not completely lost to cynicism, and Mary Lamb is like... what's the word? Foil in this movie, I guess. It just does it's the perfect balance to bring him back and just with like a little eyeball, just be like, too far. Like, kid doesn't need that. It's just the balance between Dominic Sessa's character as well, just the balance between the three of them. They kind of represent all of humanity just in one little trio. And that's just a great story.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the little things in this movie. I think this is one of those movies where it just doesn't let up with the charm. Like, there's just little things all of the time. And that's not to say that this is a movie that depends on charisma, because that's not it. It's not like, oh, these are, you know, bright, shining superstars who just own the screen. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's just a charm in all of the authenticity of the moments. There's a moment involving giving a gift, and that becomes a running gag about this gift that is given. Just stuff like that. Little things that are said here or there. It's just nonstop through this movie. It doesn't give you a chance to get unjoyful. Like, it doesn't give you a chance to get uninvested. It's just, it's always doing these little things to keep your attention and to, you know, tell you a new, you know, part of the story. It's also a movie that's unafraid to kind of change its course. What I mean by that is you get a sense when you start off that we're dealing with Dead Poets Society, right? We're dealing with...
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You know, we're dealing with... charter school is not the word I'm looking for, boarding school kind of stuff. And so we're gonna meet our crew. You know, we're gonna meet all the kids that
spend some time with them.
We're gonna spend some time with them. We're gonna get to know who they are, and you know, we're gonna see how all of these stories, you know, carry on through the end of this movie. And then 20 minutes in, we're like, oh, it's just him. It's like, oh, it's this so now. And the movie is unafraid to be this now. It doesn't feel like it has to be the same thing throughout. It follows the story, not necessarily the structure. And I think that's not always easy for a movie to do, especially because screenplays are such an art now, where writers understand how the three-act structure works, and here's what you do here, and here's how you do this. And at some point, you can lose the humanity inside of an equation. And this movie does not do that. It just feels like we are witness to a story that is happening. And that's unique. That feels very unique. And I mean, you add to it all the things you guys already talked about with the performances and, you know, all those things. And it's just a really good experience to watch. So very rewatchable.
It is. It might be one of those movies. Phil is bringing up screenshots. And I think you could bring up any screenshot from out the movie and it will bring an emotion. Like that scene where he's holding the book and he's speaking to the sex worker is just a hilarious scene, and it's the writing throughout that is so sharp and so deliberate and insightful. Like there are movies that don't waste a single word, and that just like that tingles when you know you're in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. You know every sentence is deliberate. It's beautifully directed. It's so fun to watch a movie this well put together. It also has, for me, some of the best setup and payoffs consistently throughout the movie that I'm like, oh, they're not going to pay that off. They're not going to pay that off. And by the end, pretty much everything is paid off. It's so, so good.
Yeah, it's structured really nicely like that. Or I should say it's put together really nicely like that. What's your history
with the Alexander Payne element of it all?
I was just going to bring up Payne. What is your guys' experience with Payne movies? Do you usually love them? Do you usually not? I'll run through them for you. Do you usually not enjoy them? You know, is it kind of hit or miss for you? Really, he came into prominence with Election. That was probably the first one that a lot of people knew. Then there was About Schmidt, the Jack Nicholson movie. Sideways was kind of the next level of prominence, I think, for him.
Sideways was my introduction.
Then Paris Je T'aime, which I don't think I've ever seen. I don't know what that is. Maybe I'm misreading.
That is French, Aaron.
Well, thank you, Ian. Thank you. You live right near there, so you know it's good to know. The Descendants, Nebraska, Downsizing, and now The Holdovers. What do you think of his career?
I'm realizing that I have not seen one of those movies.
Not a single one.
I haven't seen any of them.
Right.
I know
you need to Downsizing. Come back to town and we'll do an Alexander Payne, you know,
heck
marathon.
Yeah. I know Downsizing, yes, by reputation. But yeah, no, I have a massive Payne. And I can just end that sentence there. I haven't seen any of them.
Yep. Andrew, what's your kind of Alexander Payne experience?
Well, I my first introduction to him was with Sideways, and Sideways is one of my favorite movies. I think it's just stellar. It doesn't have the the upbeat happiness of Holdovers. It is a very depressing movie, but it's shot in its background is Napa Valley, so it's just this incredibly gorgeous California scenery of these wine vineyards, and it's just beautiful to look at, but you have this guy who is so unbearably depressing. And is it Thomas Hayden Church? Is that who is also in that movie?
In Sideways, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. And then, of course, The Descendants is great, and I love Nebraska. I get people's commentary on Nebraska. Why is it black and white? It doesn't add anything to the film. I get that. But at the same time, I think it's a fun movie. But, yeah, I like Alexander Payne.
I am hit or miss with him. Mostly miss, honestly. Election's fine. I like Election. About Schmidt is kind of mid for me. Sideways is good. But I'm still not like loving his stuff. Spoiler alert, Holdovers is my favorite Alexander Payne movie, which is saying something because The Descendants is really good. That's my other like Alexander Payne masterpiece. I think The Descendants, that's George Clooney in Hawaii. Yeah. I think that is really, really good. I don't like Nebraska. I didn't like Downsizing. So he was kind of on a cold streak for me, and then The Holdovers bringing me back. But it's really The Holdovers and The Descendants for me. Everything else I could kind of take or leave. I know that's weird because Sideways is such a huge hit. It's good. It's a good movie, but it's just not next level, in my opinion. So yeah, he's been an interesting director to kind of follow. And I mean, The Holdovers brings me to a place where I'm like, okay, all right, well then, you know, I'm back in. Like, you know, if you're going to do stuff like this, then that's, you know, that's going to speak a lot for how much I might enjoy. Now, you know, he didn't write it. It wasn't his script. So maybe part of it is, you know, choosing good scripts and finding good scripts. And this is certainly a great script. And so it'll be that may be part of the equation as well. Other thoughts on The Holdovers?
I love
it. It's a little bit slower paced than a lot of movies that came out last year. That's not an issue for me, but I think that that's one that needs to have people be aware of. This is a slower paced film.
I love it. I was just like, it was a balm to my soul.
You say it's slow paced, Andrew, but I'm telling you, it didn't feel slow to me at all. Like I thought there was a moment. I think maybe what you mean is like, or how I would interpret it, the narrative spin I would put on it, is that it's not explosive. It's not one of those movies that you go to.
There's that's action probably better.
And you know, those kind of things. The momentum and the intensity of it is cerebral in many ways, or comedic, or story based. But I never felt bored. I there was always something to make me laugh or keep my attention. So I wouldn't call it slow paced. I would call it
dialogue heavy.
Yeah, sure, that's fine. Yeah, I could go that route. Any other thoughts?
I love the choice to, it's a period piece, isn't it? It's set, it's set in like the 80s or 90s, right?
Oh yeah, gotta go back far enough that nobody has a cell phone, otherwise your movie gets really boring really fast.
Yes, exactly. And I love that choice, not just because of the cell phone thing, but it does have this Dead Poets Society Breakfast Club like sheen across it as well. That I don't know, like I wouldn't have missed it if it wasn't there, but now that, like, knowing it's there, I'm just like, I can't imagine this movie being any other way. And I can't quite articulate how it impacts the movie, but it feels like this is a classic movie that I'm watching for the first time. It ages the movie and gives it maybe a prestige beyond a movie that you're watching in 2024 that came out in 2024. Like, it's the credits, the way it's filmed, just immediately elevated it for me. I was like, oh, this is a classic confident movie.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on The Holdovers before we move on?
No post-credit scene.
Which eye should you stare at?
It's a good question. It's the ultimate question. All right. Well, before that is The Holdovers. By the way, that is streaming now on Peacock. If you want to see it, it has been out, it has been on VOD, and now it's streaming on Peacock. So if you happen to have that one of the streaming services, you can check it out. And I think we would clearly all recommend that you do so.
Absolutely.
Really, really good. Before we head on to the best ever challenge, a big thank you to our SIFPOP members. We did a pre-show for our members today, and we often like to do that. Andrew runs those and does some Do We Cares, and we answer a question from you and have all sorts of fun. We talked about twist endings that we hate in this one. So if you're interested in that,
my eyes twitching.
So mad.
Yes.
So mad.
Made Ian very, very angry. So if you would like to hear angry Ian, you can go to patreon.com/sifpop. Check it all out there. Support starts at $3 a month, and we appreciate whatever you do. Even if it's just telling friends about what we do, that means the world to us. So thank you for that. But again, that website is patreon.com/sifpop.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, on to the best ever challenge. Let's have some fun. I'm calling this Should Have Been Kaufman. That is the name of this best ever challenge. We will go number five to number one, and along the way,
Trump!
We will trump anything that we have higher. It would be so fun if we actually had to trump on this one. Like, because then it's like, oh, wow, we both kind of had the same thought on this movie kind of
thing.
Well,
your email did say Kaufman or like Kaufman.
No, like Kaufman is the, not Kaufman. There should be no movies.
No, that's not what the email said.
Is it? Oh, I'm sorry.
Because I have four Kaufmans and one like Kaufman.
Oh, well, that was not the intent. Ian, is that what you did as well?
This is going to get even better.
Okay.
Because I did not realize that Charlie directed this movie, and your email didn't specify
Andy
Charlie.
Kaufman.
So I went Andy, realized that I haven't seen any Andy Kaufman movies. So I had to like improvise, and I was just going to bounce off of what you guys are saying. And then I looked at Charlie and realized I haven't seen any of his movies either.
Well, that was the idea. You didn't have to see his movies to be involved in this list. Okay, this will be really fun. There will clearly be no crossover because Andrew did Charlie Kaufman movies. I did no Charlie Kaufman movies. And Ian
doesn't have a list.
Doesn't have a list.
This is what email says. Top five movies that Kaufman wrote, directed, or just feel like he should have.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that was...
I have one. I do have one.
I just read it. What this is a lesson never to get creative. Just stop being creative. Just never stretch the format.
Stay in the box, Aaron.
Stay in the lane.
For a reason.
Just stay in your lane, man. Just stay in your lane. The chat chiming in. Nick chiming in to say this whole situation is all very Charlie Kaufman.
Yes.
So, yes, we will do our best to. Here's what we're going to do. Ian, you could talk a little bit about what you did find. And then so what is your knowledge of Charlie Kaufman? Let's start there. Ian, what is your knowledge of Charlie Kaufman?
I know he did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes.
That's my Trump. Cultural awareness. That is it. So I can try and pick out some movies that are adjacent, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
That was the idea I had. It is not what I wrote, and it is not what we've done today. So all the blame is on my shoulders. That is clear. But I am excited to hear kind of what movies you think might feel like a Charlie Kaufman movie. I will give you, well, actually, Andrew, why don't you do your list all the way through?
Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
Because there will be no Trumps, and most of your list is Charlie Kaufman, and that'll give Ian a sense of the other movies that Charlie Kaufman has written or directed or done.
Yeah. Okay, so at my number five, I have Being John Malkovich, which is a wild, wild movie. I don't even know how to recommend that movie to somebody. Just if you really like John Malkovich, this movie's for you. My number four is I'm Thinking of Ending Things. This is a newer Charlie Kaufman movie. Wow. This movie has so much to say about relationships and moving on and grief. And the title can be, or the title can be so subjective. Does it mean I'm thinking of ending things in this relationship? Does it mean I am thinking of ending things, which is very dark and morbid? But there, you never know where this movie's going to go. And it's mainly just Jesse Plemons. And please forgive me, I'm blanking on her name. But it's just them sitting in a car for like, it's a very Locke-esque film. Just them sitting in a car talking. And then it gets very Kaufman at the end. Number three, I have Adaptation.
Which is the same. Before you move on, Jesse Buckley is who you're trying to think of.
Thank you.
Toni Collette is in the movie as well, and she's phenomenal. I love this movie, and a lot of people didn't. This movie came and went, and not a lot of people that year talked about I'm Thinking of Ending Things. I think it's a really great movie. Continue.
Number three, I have Adaptation. I would say besides Dream Scenario, which just came out last year, this is Nick Cage's best performance that I've seen.
Stole one of my answers.
I thought you had only seen Eternal Sunshine.
Is Dream Scenario Charlie Kaufman?
Oh, no, Adaptation.
I'm talking Adaptation.
I'm making lists. I'm writing stuff down now, and Dream Scenario popped into my head.
Well, he's not saying Dream Scenario. Patience, well, Ian. Continue, Andrew.
Where was Adaptation. I? Adaptation, yeah. This is meta done to the ultimate perfection right here. In a way that I don't think any movie could ever duplicate, because you would just get flagged for saying, hey, you're just doing Adaptation again. Be original. Number two, this is my Kaufman-esque film. So this may be, you want me to skip it?
No, let's go ahead and hear it. It'll be interesting if I have it too. That'll be fun. We'll all do our list individually this week, since it's since I screwed it up so bad.
Number two is where I have Her.
I had that on my list.
Nice. Yeah.
I think Her feels very much like a Kaufman film. Maybe it's just the Spike element of it all, because he can turn it on. Just
did you
like
say you had that at your number two?
Yes.
That's my number two as well. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
See? Oh, I'm curious to know what your number one is now, because that's what I would have pegged for your number one.
There's a reason. See, Kaufman collaborated with Spike Jonze quite a bit, and this is a Spike Jonze written, directed movie. So, like, that influence is clearly there. They vibe really well together. It makes a lot of sense. That Her would feel very Kaufman-esque. That was one of my choices.
Yeah, and Scarlett Johansson gives one of the best voice performances of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And number one is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which I think is Jim Carrey's best performance.
I will go with my Kaufman-esque movies next, and I will say, I don't know why I put that Kaufman wrote directed in that. It was not my intention. It was just supposed to be like that's why it's Kaufman-esque. But there it is. I wrote it in there, so I totally get it.
Yeah, because even the gurus, they put Kaufman movies in too.
I'm so sad I screwed it up, because I think it's a really fun thing to like kind of think outside the box. But I've learned my lesson. It won't happen again.
Never have fun again, according to Aaron Dicer.
Stop it.
So here are my top five movies that Charlie Kaufman could have been involved in, that Kaufman-esque, should have been Kaufman. Number five, probably the most interesting one on my list, Bo Burnham's Inside. There is something very Kaufman about the meta way that Bo Burnham creates this special. You can see Charlie Kaufman writing the character of Bo Burnham. Now, we know that's not what happened. We know that's, you know, this was Bo Burnham dealing with the pandemic and, you know, creativity during the pandemic. But you can see in a fictional sense, Charlie Kaufman writing this as a movie, as a story, because of the way his brain works and the themes that he likes to deal with. So I put Bo Burnham's Inside at number 5 on my list.
That's an inspired choice and I love it.
Thank you. Number 4, I have Everything Everywhere All at Once. There's a lot of this movie that feels like it could have been written or directed by Charlie Kaufman. The way it interacts with each other, the quirkiness of it, you know, the way it folds in on itself, all of those things feel very Kaufman-esque to me. So I have that at number 4. My number 3 is Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day feels like a Kaufman movie to me in a lot of ways. Like there's, you know, the repeating days. It's an interesting concept. It's very quirky and fun. It feels to me like something if Kaufman had been alive. Well, I think he was alive. I don't know when Kaufman was born. But if he had been making movies when Groundhog Day came out, then it would have been something I think he would have done something like that. We mentioned Her at number 2. That was my number 2 as well. And then my number 1 movie that Kaufman should have, could have been involved in is The Truman Show. The Truman Show feels very much like the themes that he likes to deal with. Very quirky and interesting and, you know, also deals with the idea of how media impacts the world around us. It's interesting because it shares a lot of the themes with your number 1 and the only one that Ian's seen, Eternal Sunshine. And it also shares Jim Carrey with Eternal Sunshine as well. It's interesting how similar those movies can feel to each other in some ways. But yes, so there you go. Ian, so what have you thought of during this?
I've done it. I have 5 movies. And full disclosure, I finished my list when Andrew finished talking.
So oh, okay.
Here's my list. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Number 5. I think it gets better as the list progresses.
Generally, that's how it's supposed to work.
No, I mean as in my application, how applicable these movies are.
Okay. All right.
Last Action Hero.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
A little bit of like self-awareness and and interesting conceit. Number 4, Stranger Than Fiction.
I had that in my honorable mentions.
Yay! Yes!
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a great choice.
Very good pick.
Yeah, Stranger Than Fiction's it's a really good choice.
Very self-aware and, super interesting conceit. More interesting than I think the movie delivers on. My number 3 was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind because it's the only one that I've seen. Then Dream Scenario, which we mentioned, and I think that I was pretty confident that fits the bill. Andrew confirmed that. The one I'm proudest of, because it was my number 1, The Truman Show.
Yay!
And the universe will never believe me, but I was like, when I started looking through this list and what you guys were mentioning, I was like, okay, Truman Show absolutely makes sense. So this has been an education for me. This has been incredible.
good. I changed my mind. The lesson is to do this more. The other, and Andrew, if you have any like Kaufman-esque movies in your mind that you want to mention, like in the honorable mention section, we can do that. The only other one that I had thought of possibly including on my list was the Lego Movie. There's something about the Lego Movie that feels very Kaufman to me, with the way it interacts with its characters and the world building it does towards the end. Feels like something Kaufman could have written. What about the Gurus / any others that you've thought of?
Believe it or not, the Gurus at number 3 have The Truman Show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Maybe that's so right answer to the question. Maybe that is...
It sounds like it.
Number 2, they had Adaptation, and at number 1, they had Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind.
There you go. Well, that was apparently... a best ever challenge.
That was incredible. That was the best ever challenge.
When 20 years from now, when the category is best ever challenges,
yes, you'll write the question wrong.
Number 2. This will be number two, and number one will be that best ever challenge that is the best ever challenge. Yes. That will be number one. Yeah. All right, let's finally move into buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Ian, you're our guest, so you will go last. Andrew, why don't you kick us off?
Well, if you listen to the pre-show, The Moops, then you know what my buried treasure is going to be already. It is Rocky II. We were talking about the passing of Carl Weathers, and I just want to reiterate everything that I said during the pre-show. I think that in Rocky II, Carl Weathers really steps into his own, excuse me, and he takes on the role of the villain so much better than what I imagined him being able to do. Because it's just a man whose pride and dignity he feels are like in shambles because he lost, or he didn't lose. He lost in his mind to a nobody. And what he starts getting that hate mail and everything, it made me, the passing of Carl Weathers, unfortunately, did make me really do appreciate his performance in Rocky II.
Yeah. Rocky II. It's kind of one of the, you know, it's not necessarily one of the ones people usually mention. And I don't know why that is. I think it's probably because IV is so, like, out there and in a lot of people's childhoods and, you know, just kind of hit a lot of people at the same time as, you know, a lot of pop culture was invading, you know, kids of the 80s lives. And III had Mr. T, and so I think that gets a little more recognition.
I predict pain.
And the original is often considered the, you know, like the prestige one, like the one that was actually, you know, worth, you know, awards and that kind of stuff. So I think II gets forgotten, but II's a good movie. Rocky II is decent.
I, for the first time ever watched all of the Rockies and all of the Creeds last year, did not like Rocky I at all. Had such a bad time with it. And then loved the heck out of Rocky II. And I don't think I've ever been more confused by a sequel. And then I went back and rewatched Rocky, and I was like, no, I like this movie. I have such a weird relationship with the Rocky franchise that I don't know what happened the day I watched Rocky the first time. But II saved the franchise for me. And then after that, I was like, I'm all in. Other than V. V is garbage.
I knew Tommy Morrison, so I have a bit of family, you know, familiarity with him. Oh,
interesting. I don't think he's garbage. I think the movie is.
Yeah.
Ian, you need to do a podcast called, like, Scrambled Franchises or something.
Yes!
And, like, you can talk about Scream and Rocky.
So good.
And, yeah, yeah. And just
Fast and Furious is going to be the next one.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, start with the Tokyo Drift and then... Mm-hmm. Then jump to
actually,
7.
I did it with Evil Dead. I watched Evil Dead, the like 2013 one, then Rise, and then the other one. I don't like watching things in order, apparently.
Yeah, apparently not. My buried treasure is a board game that I've been playing quite a bit, but I've been playing it on my phone as a mobile game. It is a game called Wingspan.
No, it's not.
Sorry. I have dubbed this game Birds with Friends, and that has stuck amongst those of us who are playing. So basically this is just a board game that deals with birds, and the birds have different kinds of nests. They have different kinds of foods that they eat. And
superpowers.
They have different kinds of powers, and they have different environments that they live in. I'm not going to get into the details. It does feel very complicated at first, as many modern board games can, but there is something about this game that really connects to my brain's need to find permutations. And so there's a planning element of this game where you're planning which birds to play where, how that's going to impact all the different scoring opportunities, whether you're going to score for nectar, whether you're going to score for bonus points, whether you're going to score for objectives, end of round goals. Like, there's all these different ways you score points. And so the idea is to put together a lineup based on the different permutations that scores the most points. So I've really been enjoying it, having a good time with it. And so I thought I would throw it out there for other people whose brains work the same way I do. I have played, in fact, I played the physical copy first. It's not just something that I've played on mobile. I did play the physical copy first. And I should mention there are three expansions to this game now, mm-hmm. I think.
Yep.
They're expanding to the birds of different continents. So like each expansion adds a continent. Like I think one's Europe, one's Asia. And so it just brings a whole new bunch of birds in and it really changes the gameplay. You know, there's a whole new game board for one of the expansions and you have to take certain things out and put certain things in. There's whole new game dynamics. I mentioned Nectar. That's not actually in the base game. That's a part of the expansion. So, if you play the mobile game, you play the base game unless you play an online match where you're like matched with other people. And if you do that, it actually has all the expansions. So you can play all the expansions if you do like a random online match game kind of thing. But I'm having a blast. Ian and I play. Currently, we're playing six games a day or so in our spare time. So we're both kind of addicted to this. So it's a lot of fun, I think, kind of once you get into it. Yeah, Ian, did you have any further thoughts on it?
Oh, it is. It's either a game that's going to tap into something or you'll throw it away. Like, it is an involved game. It is a difficult one to second screen because I will either lose something in the game or lose whatever is on the second screen that I'm watching. But it taps into this optimizing engine building thing in my brain as well that is very, very appealing. And it's pretty much the definition of minutes to learn, eternity to master, because there's so many permutations.
I was thinking how chess-like this game is in that there are so many moving pieces that you're trying to think ahead a certain number of moves, but you also have to think ahead if this happens and then if this happens. So you're not just thinking here are my next five moves. You're thinking here are my next five moves if this is the case. Here are my next five moves if this mm-hmm. is the case. Here's where I go if these are the kind of birds that I draw. Here's where I go if. You know, so it's just keeping in mind a lot of those, you know, possible moves. It feels very similar to chess in that way to me.
Yep.
All right, Ian, what is your buried treasure?
My buried treasure is so dumb. It's Air Force One, which it feels dumb to have this action movie from the early 90s.
You talking about Harrison Ford's Air Force
One? Heck yeah, Harrison Ford's Air Force One. I have
What's wrong with that?
Never seen this movie. It was always like on my mum and dad's, like they have this big wall filled with DVDs and videos, and invariably we'd watch the same three over and over and over again. And Air Force One was always up there and I never watched it. And a few months ago I was watching the Jack Ryan movies, and that's obviously Harrison Ford heavy. And just jumped into Air Force One and I love this movie so much. It's so fun. And it's what I love about it is that it's not Harrison Ford being super moody Harrison Ford. Like, as Indy and as Han Solo, Han, whatever, and as even as Jack Ryan, he's kind of this grumpy, moody, oh, I don't want to do this. But in this, he's the president of the United States. He's charismatic. But he, like, this is Harrison Ford dangerous because he uses his charisma and, like, turns it on. And it's Die Hard on a plane. I know Die Hard 2 is Die Hard with a plane, but it's basically Die Hard with a plane. And it's Gary Oldman doing an incredible Russian accent and being Hans Gruber. There is just nothing to not like about this movie. It's just a great 90s action movie with cheesy taglines. He boots an individual off of the plane and just said, like, this huge score builds up and then the music cuts and he just says, get off my plane. It's so good. It gave me tingles. I think it's Jerry Goldsmith did the score in like 7 hours and it's just, yeah, so much fun. I love it.
There you go. Air Force One is available for rental or purchase on VOD. Rocky Two is available on Max, and Wingspan is available on Android or Apple Play. And there you go. Those are our buried treasures, and I think we did it, guys. I think we managed to power
through. We didn't.
To power through my sudden urge to be creative and still somehow made a podcast. Congratulations.
I hope you learned your lesson.
I have indeed. I will never learn any lessons. There, thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for coming by again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thanks to Ian Whittington for coming by.
Yay.
Ian, where do you want people to find you?
Just on the internet and stuff. I do a Star Trek podcast where if you really want me angry, then I get angry on there when Danae disagrees with my Star Trek opinions and decides to hate on Darmok, which is just unthinkable. But we're currently doing an unconventional love theme for the kind of month of February-ish, and we're doing Star Trek episodes that are not just lovey-dovey, but take the love into new and interesting directions. So yeah, that's Captain's Pod, and then find me on X at Wit's End.
He also gets angry when you tell him all the ships are called the Enterprise.
They're not...
See?
It erupts out of me.
What's the Klingon Enterprise called?
You're a get out.
Oh, God. I'm not as big as a Trekkie as Ian, and even I can get a little infuriated by that.
I could tell you what it is, but I'm not going to, because okay, I don't think you really want to know.
Fair enough. We do appreciate you being on. We also appreciate our Sif Pop members for supporting what goes on here. As mentioned, that support starts at $3 a month. If you want to check it all out with the bonus episodes, all that kind of fun stuff, it's at patreon.com/siftpop. You can connect with us by leaving a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can email us feedback@sifpop.com if you want to send us an email. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than actually pondering what nothingness actually is. We'll be back next week with more fun, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Probably, is it Madam Web? Is that next? I think Madam Web comes out Thursday.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.